Wisconsin and southern Michigan to the low 50s across southwestern Missouri. Low temperatures overnight tonight will range from the upper teens across northern Illinois, southern Wisconsin and southern Michigan to the upper 20s across southern Missouri and western Kentucky. The National Weather Service forecast for East Central Illinois this afternoon, cloudy. A mixture of freezing rain and snow is possible early this afternoon, changing to all snow by late afternoon. The Weather Service office in Lincoln says light icing on untreated roadways is possible. The Weather Service says, however, that any snowfall accumulation will be minor. The high this afternoon, 30. The wind out of the southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, cloudy with a chance for snow. The low 19. The wind will be out of the northwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, cloudy with a chance of afternoon snow flurries. The high 32. The wind from the west at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a chance of flurries early. The low 25 and a west wind from 10 to 15 miles per hour. Saturday, partly sunny with a high of 35. Saturday night, mostly cloudy with a low of 19. The outlook for Sunday and Sunday night, mostly cloudy with a high around 30 and a low in the upper teens. At noon Central Time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the low 20s to 40 degrees at Carbondale, where it was partly sunny. Most locations, however, reported cloudy skies. At Rockford and Chicago, light snow was reported, 23 degrees at Rockford, 24 at O'Hare. In Bloomington, normal 26, Mattoon 29. In Carbondale, partly sunny, 40 degrees. In South Bend, light snow, 22. Lafayette and Indianapolis reported 28 degrees. It was 30 at Terre Haute. Evansville checked in with 33 degrees. At the top of the hour at Willard Airport, it was cloudy with fog. The temperature 27. The dew point 23. The relative humidity 85%. The wind out of the south at 18 miles per hour, giving us a wind chill of 14. And I'm sorry, I don't have the barometric pressure reading for you today. At 12:39 Central Time, 29 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. The sky is cloudy.
I'm Carl Caldwell, and I've been a lifelong student of American Civil War history. In 2011, I invite you to join me on a journey to benefit WILL. We'll ride vintage rail cars to battlefields and exhibits in Chicago, D.C., Gettysburg, and more. Civil War train departs for 8 days beginning July 16th. For more information, phone 217-333-7300.
The Congressional Budget Office is forecasting modest but steady growth. It is also projecting a $1.5 trillion deficit this year. NPR's David Wellnut reports.
The CBO says unemployment levels will dip to 9.2% by the end of this year, and a percentage point lower around election time next year. Unemployment is not expected to decline to its historic level of about 5% until 2016. The CBO also predicts this year's budget deficit will reach a record $1.5 trillion. That's too much for Maine Republican Senator Olympia Snow.
So it's clear to me that we have reached that tipping point. And if we continue on this current trajectory of spending, as indicated by CBO, spending will represent 45% of the gross domestic product, and our national debt as a part of the GDP will be 90% in just 9 years.
Congressional Republicans say the solution is to slash spending, but Senate Budget Committee Chairman Kent Conrad warns that doing so could plunge a fragile recovery into a double-dip recession.
We need another 18 months to 2 years before we start imposing the really tough medicine that is going to have to be imposed if we're going to deal with this long-term debt threat.
Conrad said Congress and the White House need to agree on what that medicine will be soon. David Wellner, NPR News, the Capitol.
Many of today's movie blockbusters would not exist without the aid of computer-generated imagery. Think Avatar and Lord of the Rings. But movie magic long predates computers. A new book explores the past century of art direction and the creative effects that have lit up the silver screen. NPR's Susan Stamberg has more.
You want movie magic? Look at Dr. Zhivago. The Russian Revolution, hot passion in a very cold place.
I can remember seeing that film years ago and freezing in the theater.
Kathy Whitlock is author of Designs on Film, A Century of Hollywood Art Direction.
You just felt the coldness of that whole set. And ironically, that was filmed in the summer in Spain on a soundstage.
Production designer John Box had to create an ice palace. An onion-domed love nest was built. Then Box and his crew made it icy.
And they would literally spray all the architecture, the chandeliers, the interior furniture with hot wax, and then they'd pour cold water on it to create that ice effect.
White wax solidified, glistening in places with handfuls of marble dust.
Putting on my top hat, tying up my white tie, brushing off my tail.
More glisten and gloss was created by 1930s production designers for the Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers movies. The black and white films had Art Deco set designs and streamlined dance floors, fashioned at RKO with an early form of plastic.
The floors were made with a material which was new at the time called Bakelite. The dance floor was very hard to maintain. Of course, all the high heels were constantly scratching the floors. They had to go back and repolish them between takes. So it was a high-maintenance material.
Ginger Rogers doing everything Fred Astaire did, backwards and in high scuffing heels. Chinatown. Director Roman Polanski's 1974 classic about bringing water to Los Angeles.
Mulvihill, what are you doing here?
Shut my water off. What's it to you?
How'd you find out about it? You don't drink it. You don't take a bath in it.
Chinatown's production designer Richard Silbert made water and its absence the movie's visual motif.
You had to have parched landscape. You had to have colors that reflected this parched landscape, you know, hay, straw, orange, red, brown. You became thirsty watching that movie.
The only green spots in Chinatown are places where rich people live, those powerful enough to bring water to their property. Everyone else suffered through the drought under a sky that's always white. No clouds.
Yeah, they would have shot to the south whenever possible and overexposed the sky.
That's Thomas Walsh, president of the Art Directors Guild. He says film designers are narrative artists who translate the screenwriter's concept into visuals you can shoot. Art directors and set designers will go to extraordinary ends to make a scene look authentic. For the 1976 film All the President's Men, about the uncovering of the Watergate scandal by reporters Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward, production designer George Jenkins recreated the Washington Post newsroom. Author Kathy Whitlock says Jenkins and his team did their research at the paper's real offices in Washington, D.C.
They literally itemized, measured, photographed, detailed every square inch of that newsroom. It was really incredible. The Post sent them boxes of trash, a lot of papers, government directories, mail, things that they could use for authenticity to spread across the desk on the Burbank soundstage.
Tom Walsh, the Art Directors Guild chief, says his people spend lots of time foraging for artifacts to make the magic look real. Walsh calls them all cultural anthropologists. Nice title.
It is. You know, we have a lot of descriptions. I mean, also barkeep and, you know, department shrink. You know, it's a long list.
But we digress.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
So, in the golden age of Hollywood, how did they make the yellow brick road for The Wizard of Oz? Not with bricks, Natch. Can't dance on bricks. They painted brick shapes onto a flat floor. And the color?
The story that I've heard is that the initial yellow that they used looked green in the camera tests. Ultimately, they actually went down to the local hardware store and bought their industrial yellow paint, and it seemed to work just fine.
In the Land of Oz, the Emerald City had colored horses, white, then purple, then bright red, then yellow. How'd they do that?
The horses were colored with jello crystals.
And Kathy Whitlock says they had to keep recoloring them because between takes, the animals would lick off the sugary jello. The Then there's the poor, starved Civil War horse pulling Scarlett O'Hara's wagon in Gone with the Wind. William Cameron Menzies was the production designer.
Woebegone was the horse. And you remember the scene where she was going back to Tara and they were going over the bridge and they were beating the horse and it just collapses. And they had to find a new horse because the original one that was supposedly thin had gained weight and his ribs were no longer visible. So they had to paint dark shadows to make the horse look gaunt.
They burned Atlanta in Gone with the Wind, or to recreate the burning of Atlanta, they burned leftover sets from King Kong and the Garden of Allah on a lot in Culver City, just blocks from where I'm speaking. It is said the flames were 500 feet high sometimes, and Culver City residents kept phoning local police and fire stations in great alarm. Imagining for the Movies, Designs on Film, A Century of Hollywood Art Direction. The book is full of tales of the fakery and fun involved in getting us to sit in front of screens, sometimes in dark movie theaters, and really believe. I'm Susan Stamberg, NPR News, Culver City, California.
And you'll find examples of all that movie magic at npr.org.
Join us next time on Illinois Pioneers as we examine the history of Parkland College with two of its earliest employees. We'll revisit the days 45 years ago when 1,300 members of the first class and their instructors spread out in temporary quarters throughout Champaign, how the permanent campus site was chosen, and how Parkland quickly became an important part of the fabric of East Central Illinois. Tonight at 7:30 on WILL-TV.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 27th of January, 2011, the birthday of Mozart, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, born in Salzburg, Austria, in 1756, devoted his life to music, a child prodigy. By the time he was five, he could perform difficult pieces on the piano and the violin. Made a name for himself as a composer while he was still in his teens, and went on to write some of the most elegant operas of all time, The Marriage of Figaro, Don Giovanni, and The Magic Flute, even as he loved to write bawdy letters to his friends, and died at the age of 35 in the midst of composing his Requiem. It's the birthday of Lewis Carroll, born Charles Lutwidge Dodgson in Cheshire, England, 1832, best known as